Imagine walking through life wearing glasses that filter reality, making you see only what others want you to see. Then one day, someone offers you a choice. Continue with your comfortable illusion, or take a pill that will reveal the harsh truth about gender dynamics, sexual relationships, and power. This is the premise behind Rollo Tomassi's controversial bestseller that has quietly become required reading for millions of men worldwide. With over 12 million downloads and translations in multiple languages, The Rational Male has been called the Bible of the Red Pill movement by the New York Times and counted among the favorite books of public figures like Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson. What makes this book so powerful and threatening to the established social order is its unflinching examination of intersexual dynamics that most people intuitively sense but rarely articulate. The most fundamental principle in understanding male-female dynamics is deceptively simple. In any relationship, the person with the most power is the one who needs the other the least. This explains why the essence of attraction isn't what most men have been taught. Women are naturally drawn to men who demonstrate abundance rather than scarcity, men who maintain multiple dating prospects simultaneously, like a plate spinner balancing spinning plates on sticks. This isn't about manipulation, but about a psychological reality. A man is as confident and valuable as his options. When a man pursues multiple women simultaneously, he develops a subconscious understanding that if one prospect doesn't work out, others might. This manifests in behaviors and attitudes that women covertly recognize, making him a commodity worth competing for. The confidence that comes from genuine options cannot fake. It radiates through every interaction. Most men use what Tomassi calls sniper mentality, patiently waiting for the perfect moment to take one shot at their one special girl, wasting valuable time and opportunities. The effective approach is the shotgun approach, casting influence widely, like fishing with a trolling net rather than a single hook. Within relationships, the average man identifies completely with his partner because she becomes his only source of intimacy, shifting power dramatically to her advantage. The man who maintains at least the perception of options preserves power balance, explaining why successful men typically reserve commitment. Contrary to what many believe, spinning plates isn't about collecting notches or being dishonest. The solution is brutal honesty about non-exclusivity from the outset. Being truthful with all parties not only neutralizes social pressure, but reinforces your position as a man with options. This creates natural competition anxiety among women, a powerful driver of attraction. The profound insight here is that monogamy should never be a goal in itself, but rather a byproduct of successfully understanding how options create confidence and frame control. The frame you enter committed monogamy with determines the relationship's health throughout its duration. Most men operate under a set of beliefs about gender relations that have been carefully constructed to benefit women's sexual strategy at the expense of men's. This social programming runs so deep that questioning it feels like heresy. The average frustrated chump, AFC, exhibits numerous self-defeating beliefs, subscribing to feminine idealizations, viewing supplication as support, following the savior schema, expecting intimacy for solving problems, embracing the martyr schema, sacrifice equals devotion, and accepting the friend's debt, friendship as path to intimacy. These men also believe women consciously know and honestly express what they want, use deductive reasoning rather than observing behavior, subscribe to the identification myth, becoming like her to attract her, consider long-distance relationships viable, and harbor fears of solitude leading to settling for substandard relationships. The sniper mentality describes men who patiently wait for one target woman, trying to prove their quality by being friends first. They believe desexualizing themselves makes them more attractive by appearing different from other guys. This approach bypasses essential attraction stages and sexual tension, going straight to comfortable rapport, the opposite of arousal. When they finally express romantic interest, women feel deceived, responding with, "My God, all you wanted was sex this whole time?" The friend zone persists because its outcome is so predictable as a rejection strategy. A man's best response to "let's just be friends" is walking away, which serves his interest regardless of whether she's testing or rejecting him. By confidently withdrawing attention, he positions himself as the prize, demonstrates he won't be manipulated, and plants doubt about her initial assessment. Unplugging from this conditioning often brings disillusionment, as magical thinking about soulmates gives way to practical understanding of intergender dynamics. Recent scientific advances have demystified human connection. We now understand the biochemical nature of emotions like love and trust, women's ovulatory cycles, and evolutionary psychology. Men are finally awakening to the female-centric social schema established during the sexual revolution. Game emerged as a countermeasure, made possible through advances in communication technology and socio-psychological theory. Now men can share notes globally, pulling back the curtain on decades of feminization programming. Game isn't about tricks or manipulation. It's about understanding female psychology and developing the confidence and skills to navigate it effectively. At its core, game is a series of behavioral modifications to life skills based on psychological and sociological principles to facilitate intersexual relations between genders. The feminine imperative attempted to shame game back into obscurity, but found its old social conventions less effective in the internet era. As game evolved to understand the meta-scale of feminine social control, it branched into specialized areas, Christian game, married game, etc., while maintaining its core focus on male re-empowerment. Opening with Pook's insight that women would rather share a successful man than be attached to a faithful loser, Tomasi explains how sexual dynamics shift after commitment. Pre-commitment sex serves as qualification, driven by competition anxiety, while post-commitment sex becomes a tool for compliance and reward. This shift explains declining sexual frequency in long-term relationships as women replace urgency with agency, using sex as leverage. Men have an intrinsic upper hand in relationships if they're willing to exercise it. Rather than complying with demands and hopes of receiving sex, the intuitive but ineffective approach, men must counterintuitively return to creating competition anxiety. This requires subtle disengagement rather than overt hostility, demonstrating that her sexual agency isn't a motivator for his decisions. Men must reject the premise that female sexuality is the authority in relationships. When a woman controls the relationship frame with sexual access, it creates an unspoken understanding that she can play the pussy card to gain compliance. This undermines respect in the long term. Saying no, despite potential sexual withholding, devalues her sexual power and reintroduces competition anxiety. Tomasi presents a comprehensive sexual market value, SMV, plotting age against desirability for both genders. Women's SMV peaks between 22 to 24, representing their maximum fertility, desirability, and male attention. After this apex, women's SMV declines steadily, creating anxiety between ages 27 to 30 as they must shift from short-term party years to long-term provisioning strategies. Men's SMV starts lower but rises gradually, peaking around age 36 when they've maximized social status, professional success, and maturity while still maintaining physical appeal. The concept of alpha is widely misunderstood, with most men defining it in ways that conveniently align with their own strengths. Alpha is not a demographic, but a mindset. There are noble alphas and scoundrel alphas, with the difference being application rather than essence. Corey Worthington, the Alpha Buddha, exemplifies alpha in its purest form. A teenage troublemaker who hosted a destructive house party and showed zero remorse when confronted by media. Though a poor example of a human being, he's a textbook example of alpha, unclouded by pretense, afterthought, or self-awareness. What makes him insulting to normal men is his natural, internalized alpha bravado that many men pay fortunes to acquire. The average healthy 5-year-old boy doesn't need alpha lessons. He naturally explores, takes risks, and displays irrational confidence. This unrefined alpha swagger is innate to males. When unencumbered by adult abstract thinking, a boy is as alpha as he'll ever be. It takes a lifetime of feminized conditioning to crush this vigor and create the pliable beta that serves feminine imperatives. All game theory and PUA techniques ultimately aim to reconnect men with the primal alpha energy they possessed as children. The nature versus nurture debate applies perfectly to alpha traits. Are they inherited or learned? Tomasi's perspective is that biology determines the starting point, while environment either refines or represses these tendencies. Ruch V's myth of the natural theory suggests alpha behavior develops through trial and error. Even naturals learn through practice and experimentation, connecting attempts with results. Every man has some concept of game refined through interaction since childhood. For some, this process comes easier, particularly those with physical advantages, who receive more encouragement from women. Alpha traits are also situational and contextual. The same energy that makes a heroic Marine respected can make a teacher attractive to a student. This explains why some men appear alpha in certain environments, but beta in others. Hypergamy, women's tendency to marry up or seek partners of higher status, is the driving force behind female sexual behavior. This isn't about women being inferior, but about evolved psychological mechanisms that serve reproductive fitness. Women employ pluralistic sexual strategies that shift throughout their lives. During peak fertility, they prioritize extrinsic male characteristics, attractiveness, muscularity, for short-term mating. As their SMV decreases, they shift toward intrinsic qualities for long-term security. According to strategic pluralism theory, men pursue strategies based on their mating market value. Attractive men seek multiple partners, while less attractive men invest heavily in mates and offspring. Women face trade-offs, often forced to choose between males displaying fitness indicators versus those offering good long-term investment. The uncomfortable truth is that women never completely abandon either strategy, readily reprioritizing their intimacy conditions as environment warrants. This pluralistic nature of hypergamy threatens the feminine imperative, as nothing is more threatening yet simultaneously attractive to women than men aware of their own value. Women's pluralistic sexual strategy is encoded in their genetics. During ovulation, they seek high testosterone alpha men for short-term breeding opportunities. During menstruation, they prefer security-providing beta males for pair bonding. While women can resist these base impulses through conviction or realism about their SMV, all have the capacity to throw caution to the wind given the right circumstances. The concept of "not all women are like that," NAWALT, is challenged as a comfortable fiction. Despite claims that intelligent, level-headed women carefully select partners, observable behavior consistently validates female hypergamy. Even good girls select for the most accessible alpha males their attractiveness commands, while simultaneously filtering for potential long-term providers. Most divorced men are blindsided precisely because they lack this understanding, believing their sacrifices and contributions would buffer against hypergamy. Hypergamy doesn't care about a man's virtues, sacrifices, or investments. It doesn't care how great a father he is, how he rearranged his career, how supportive he's been, or about wedding vows. Our culture perpetuates numerous myths that serve feminine imperatives while disadvantaging men. Understanding these myths is essential for navigating relationships effectively. The fear of becoming a lonely old man is an exaggerated myth in modern Western culture, the male equivalent of the old maid stereotype. This fear serves as both a feminine shaming tactic, commit or end up alone, and a buffer against rejection for men. most beta males transition directly from mother to wife without experiencing independence, using this myth to justify settling for substandard relationships. The claim that women are just as or more sexual than men is a patently false social convention. Biologically, healthy men produce 12 to 17 times more testosterone than women, making it impossible for women to naturally want sex as frequently or intensely as men. When female bodybuilders use steroids, they report a 100-fold increase in libido, demonstrating this biological reality. The good girl presents herself as proper, reputation-conscious, and seeking a man with a good heart, but biology ultimately trumps conviction. Sexuality will not go unexpressed. These women seem above seduction, creating a recipe for one-itis in men who pedestalize them. The good girl isn't necessarily prudish, she's tactical. She's cute enough to make hypergamy work for her, using prudishness selectively to keep suitors in stasis while evaluating better options. The biological clock concept conveniently aligns with the myth of women's sexual peak, occurring just as women approach or hit the wall. While maternal instincts exist, their timing has been deliberately distorted by feminine-centric cultural influence. The actual biological clock ticks loudest at 22 to 24, not conveniently when a woman needs male provisioning most in her declining SMV mid-30s. The notion that looks aren't as important for women is a calculated feminine convention. It serves women's dual mating strategy. Encouraging men to think personality matters more makes them acceptable future providers, while women breed in the short term with physically attractive men. Tomasi presents a comprehensive set of iron rules that serve as foundational principles for men navigating modern relationships and social dynamics. 1. Frame is everything. The concept of frame represents the dominant reality in any interaction. Always maintain control of the frame while artfully concealing this control. Frame isn't about raw power or dominance, but rather about whose reality becomes the operational foundation of the relationship, yours or hers. Strong frame manifests in subtle ways, setting boundaries, maintaining principles, and leading interactions without apparent effort. 2. Never reveal the number of women you've slept with or share intimate details of past sexual experiences with a current partner. This seemingly innocent disclosure often backfires spectacularly, triggering competitive anxiety, retroactive jealousy, or emotional resentment. Even if directly asked, maintain ambiguity. This information rarely serves any constructive purpose and can permanently alter how you're perceived. 3. Any woman who makes you wait for sex isn't worth the wait. Genuine desire cannot be negotiated or bargained for. Women who are genuinely attracted will find ways to overcome practical obstacles to intimacy. Token resistance differs from genuine logistical constraints. Understanding this distinction prevents manipulation through sexual gatekeeping. True desire is spontaneous and urgent, not calculated and delayed. 4. Never live with a woman you aren't married to or planning to marry within 6 months. Cohabitation fundamentally alters relationship dynamics by removing competitive anxiety and sexual tension. Living together prematurely creates domestic familiarity that erodes attraction. It also complicates exit strategies and creates pseudo-marriage obligations without formal commitment. Financial entanglement often follows, further complicated by shared social circles and routines. 5. Always bring your own protection. With 41 contraception options available to women, but only 2 for men, reproductive control remains predominantly female-centric. Men must take personal responsibility for birth control rather than delegating this crucial aspect to partners. This rule extends beyond mere pregnancy prevention to include protecting oneself from STIs and reproductive coercion. 6. Women cannot love men the way men expect to be loved. Men often project their own conception of love onto women, expecting unconditional devotion similar to maternal love. However, female love is inherently pragmatic and conditional, tied to hypergamous instincts and social positioning. Understanding this prevents disappointment and enables realistic relationship expectations. 7. Never attempt to reconstruct a failed relationship. Past issues invariably resurface, regardless of promises or temporary changes. The dynamics that led to the initial failure remain embedded in the relationship's foundation. New attempts carry the weight of previous disappointments, creating permanent doubt and insecurity. Clean breaks allow for genuine growth and new opportunities. 8. Always let a woman figure out why she won't sleep with you. Never do it for her. Self-imposed limitations through concepts like leagues or perceived status differences serve only to restrict opportunities. Men often disqualify themselves based on arbitrary standards, doing women's filtering for them. Let women make their own decisions about attraction and compatibility. 9. Never seriously self-deprecate with a woman you intend to be intimate with. Self-deprecation, even when genuine or humble, kills attraction by triggering pity. Women instinctively recoil from men they pity, as it contradicts hypergamous attraction to strength and capability. Vulnerability must be carefully managed to avoid appearing weak or seeking sympathy. These rules form a practical framework for maintaining attraction, managing relationships, and preserving male autonomy in modern dating dynamics. Effective communication in relationships requires a deeper understanding of female psychology rather than simply engaging in open dialogue. When communication breaks down in a relationship, you won't receive an explicit message about it. That's precisely what broken communication entails. The subtle signs often manifest through changed behavior, emotional distance, or decreased intimacy long before any verbal expression of issues. A fundamental truth in intersexual dynamics is that genuine desire cannot be negotiated or bartered for. The moment you tell your wife or girlfriend that you'll exchange specific behaviors or actions for her desire, you transform what should be organic attraction into contractual obligation. This negotiation creates a covert contract that ultimately undermines authentic desire. What hypergamy seeks to confirm can never be explicitly explained through words, only demonstrated through consistent actions and behavior patterns. Men must learn to communicate primarily through behavior and presence rather than overt verbal expression. Allow women to reach the conclusions you intend through their own observations and interpretations. A woman's imagination is your most powerful tool in attraction dynamics. The most common mistake frustrated men make is divulging everything about themselves, operating under the false belief that women desire complete transparency as a prerequisite for intimacy. Women instinctively respond better to mystery and gradual revelation rather than full disclosure. Women are fundamentally more attuned to how something is communicated rather than what is being communicated. The subtleties of tone, body language, timing, and context often carry more weight than the actual words spoken. Success in relationships isn't about communication quantity, but rather about the quality and method of communication. You cannot simply tell women anything directly. They must be led to your conclusion through their own process of discovery and feel they arrived there independently. Men often desperately seek to understand what women want, believing this demonstrates care and consideration for their partners. However, the reality is more nuanced. Women either genuinely lack conscious awareness to acknowledge what universally attracts them, beyond individual preferences, or they intentionally misdirect men's efforts to understand their motivations because they instinctively desire a man who naturally gets it without requiring explicit instruction. This dynamic exists because, whether through unconscious biological programming or conscious social adaptation, protecting hypergamy's mechanism is a primary female imperative. What women truly desire is optimized hypergamy with a partner who embodies natural understanding without conscious awareness of these dynamics. The ideal scenario for most women is achieving the perfect balance of emotional connection, parental commitment, and provisional security with a man who inherently understands and satisfies their hypergamous nature without requiring explanation or acknowledgement of these underlying motivations. Understanding this framework helps explain why direct communication about relationship dynamics often fails to achieve desired results, and why demonstrated understanding through action consistently proves more effective than verbal negotiation. Everything men experience, from social conditioning to expectations of mature adulthood, serves what Tomasi calls the feminine imperative. This reality is so encompassing that masculinity itself is defined by how well men accommodate feminine influence. For one gender to realize their sexual imperative, the other must sacrifice their own. This power dynamic establishes feminine reality as normative, creating rules for dating, social conventions maintaining cognitive dominance, and laws binding society to feminine benefit. The reality we consider normal is rendered by femme-centric influence. This framework is so deeply embedded in culture, laws, media, and our collective consciousness that we take it for granted as the operative reality. Women's most powerful tool throughout centuries has been their unknowability, the feminine mystique that makes them seem elusive, occasionally irrational, and ultimately mysterious. While men are respected for being forthright and resolute, women are rewarded for cultivating this sense of unpredictability. The feminine mystique perpetuates the notion that sexuality is a woman's primary agency, encouraging any social mechanism that contributes to its value. This creates a scarcity mentality in men that often leads to one-itis, serving feminine imperatives by having men willingly adopt this mystical mindset regarding female intimacy. Beneath women's use of the wall as an intrasexual competitive weapon lies a deeper truth: the inevitable decay of their sexual appeal, which for most women is their only real agency of power over men. Nearly every feminine social convention is rooted in avoiding this fear. Nothing threatens yet simultaneously attracts a woman more than a man aware of his own value. This creates an internal conflict in women's sexual strategy. They want a man other women desire, but need to limit his options while determining he has those options. Due to women's short window of peak sexual viability, it's crucial that men remain unaware of their own slowly increasing SMV until women can secure commitment. If men become aware of their value too soon, female hypergamy fails. This isn't a grand conspiracy, but a social construct learned through observation and repetition.